Welcome back to Southeastern Ohio's Outdoor Show. My co-host is Don Big Daddy Pigeth.
Yes, I am, Chuck.
I'm Chuck Berry, and people should know that by now, but I like saying it.
Yeah. You do it well.
I try.
Well, after 12 shows, you ought to have it down anyhow.
12 shows in, what, 14 years?
Yeah.
You should probably get there. Anyways, hey, in the house tonight with us, we are lucky to have in the studio with us Chris Gilkey. He is a wildlife officer for Meigs County. And has got to the opportunity to, with much help from other folks and support, Chris has got to spearhead a new program. The state's kicking off, and we're excited about it. I think it's going to make jobs easier and investigations easier, and kind of
make it harder for bad guys too.
Well, you know, and we just talked about that the last show about some of the things that we've seen going on, and this type of help from the state's probably going to help. With some of those prosecutions and investigations and stuff like that. We talk about that stuff from time to time, Chris, but okay. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
You know, one thing we want to thank you for is giving Chelsea an easier last name to pronounce. we just want to tell you that right away. We've had Chris's wife on the show, Chelsea, and first of all, my sons want to know how you find a girl that has her own hunting dog, guns, a dad with a boat, and all that. I mean, they just...
You know,
you outkicked your coverage, brother.
I outpunted my coverage.
That's for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's never an argument in my house about buying a gun or a piece of hunting equipment.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I just got really lucky.
There you go.
Yeah. Keep looking, fellas.
So, anyways, Chris, you know, a while back, you kind of started researching some stuff, and sometimes we work on things and we don't get them to quite go the way we want to. But the program that you and the state are kicking off is a canine unit, and you're going to have 5 of them throughout the state, from what I understand.
Yeah.
And let's talk about the history of how this all came about, and what do you think it's going to bring to the state and investigations and wildlife officers and all that?
Okay. Well, it started with a few – over the years, it's been, you know, brought up several times, and it never got any traction. And then here recently, you know, two other officers and I – really dug our heels in, and we did a ton of research, and you know, we felt that to bring this program up, we had to look at, you know, the benefit that it was going to give the division and its constituents,
right.
You know, because we're responsible for the sportsman's dollars, make sure that we're spending that, you know, in a way that's going to benefit us, you know, for everybody. So we researched basically the cost. We did cost analysis on this, researched how to build the best canine program that we could, and the three of us worked really hard to put a lot of research into it, and we did our legwork. We talked over this program and other programs with 20 some other states that currently have wildlife canines, and we asked them what worked, what didn't work, and we tried to learn from their mistakes, you know, what they did right and wrong, and we put that together. And then I was called up to central office, our Fountain Square.
That can be scary.
Yeah, you know, yeah. When you get that call,
head office, please.
Yeah, don't know what's coming.
Don had a lot of that in high school.
But the Chief Miller called me up to Columbus to sit down with the assistant chiefs and to discuss, you know, the program and see what the research that we did came up with. And we were probably 15 minutes into a 45-minute conversation. And the chief said, "We're doing it." And
that gives you a boost of confidence.
It did. All that hard work had paid off. And then I thought it was a lot of work before, but then the real work started. Because the administration decided that we were not only going to start with one or two dogs, that we were going to do 5 dogs. We have 5 districts, so to start this program, we were going to put a dog in each district. It's just been, from October to now, it's been go, go, go. And we have been able to successfully pull off, from October to now, we have our first 3 dogs that have started training. We're going to start an official academy January 22nd. It'll be 10 weeks long. It's going to be some long days, 10, 12-hour days, making sure these dogs are trained right. A lot of academies are 6 weeks long. We're going to do 10 weeks. And it'll be 4 days a week, like I said, 10, 12-hour days, getting these dogs prepared. Right now, we're working on a lot of the basics. A lot of these dogs are green, so they don't know the Sitz, as we use in German, or Platz, lay down. They don't know those things. We're teaching them those. We're teaching them the basics of tracking. It's fundamental work right now. We're teaching them the basics of odor work. Most of your canines that you encounter in your life are narcotics dogs trained to detect drugs. The unique thing about our dogs is we're training them to detect wildlife-related items. So the list that we're training on is turkey, deer, waterfowl, fish, in particular perch and walleye, gunpowder, and ginseng. So,
all fish don't smell the same?
Believe it or not, there was research done, I believe, out of Auburn. It's species specific. You can train on a variety different, but you know, perch and walleye, perch, walleye, stalker are all in the same family.
Mm-hmm.
So that seems to be, you know, the ones that we get a lot of trouble with overbags and violations up on Lake Erie.
I was going to say that's the bulk of the violations are right there.
So. Yeah, I mean, those species in specific. But we have the capability of training these dogs to any scent that we want. But it's phenomenal. We kicked off the program.
Now, one of the scents, too, is going to be anything a human's touched.
Correct, yeah. So addition to the odor work, they'll be trained to track people, okay? They'll be trained to do area searches for people. They'll be trained, the German Shepherds that we have will be trained dual purpose. So they'll be trained in protection work. So they'll be able to search building for people. They'll be able to protect me as his handler in the situation if it would arise. And article search. And the article search is what you're talking about.
Right.
The article search would be anything that a human hand touched. Your cell phone, a gun, a shell casing. You could imagine. I mean, the programs in other states make so many cases just off the article search alone.
Let's talk about that, Chris, a little bit, because where do you see it benefiting you guys now? And my first guess is the speed of finding the things you're looking for, but how do you see this really benefiting some of your investigations?
I'll give you a recent example.
Okay.
So we have incidences, what we call hunter incidents. And we don't call them hunter accidents, we call them incidents. So when, you know, somebody would end up getting shot in the course of hunting, unfortunately, you know, we had a fatal hunter incident in northeast Ohio. When something like that happens, you know, obviously it's very tragic and very stress-related, but as officers, we owe it, you know, the investigation to find out who's responsible for that. We treat it, you know, just like a crime, you know, it's a crime scene. You know what I mean? Somebody lost their life. It's very serious. And one of the biggest pieces of the puzzle when we're putting those crime scenes together is finding the shell casing or the wad. Because that can help determine us if there's five guys there and one of them shooting a 20 gauge and the rest are shooting 12 gauges or a muzzleloader. It can help determine us, you know, where the people were standing, where the shots were fired. And, I mean, I've been on hunter incidences in my 13-year career where we looked for hours and hours for shell casings and wads and sometimes never find them. In this case, Pennsylvania Fish and Game has a canine program. Their dogs are trained in gunpowder. They called up Pennsylvania Fish and Game. They sent down one of their dogs, and the dog located the item in 5 minutes.
Wow.
Amazing. It's phenomenal. I wish I could spit out this figure. I got so many numbers running through my head, but the number that California estimated that their dogs, one dog saved per man hours, was unbelievable. I mean, it was thousands and thousands of dollars. You take five or six guys, you know, out there for hours looking for something. So it's in the hunter incident world, you know, it's going to aid us in that. A lot of the other states, you know, use them when you get that shell, you get that deer shot out in the middle of that field. And, you know, you might have a suspect, but you can't tie him to a gun. You know, that shell casing is usually out there someplace. You know, sometimes it's in the truck, sometimes it's not. That dog's going to be able to locate that item. Sometimes people they'll shine a field and take off and throw the gun out the window and then claim to have no gun. That dog's going to find that item.
Yeah.
So those are great. As far as ginseng goes, you know, we get a lot of guys out there that
you know, that's been an issue, and every year you hear violations of that. Where's that going to play? That's going to be interesting.
So, yeah, all you ginseng violators, listen up on this one. We're maybe we can do some prevention here. So as far as the ginseng goes, you know, we see a lot of that on state land. You know what I mean? We see it on private property. Our dogs will have the capability to track human odor to wherever that person was. I mean, if they're about there digging, if you know, and a lot of times, you know, guys will try to ditch the ginseng bags on us and hide it in the woods and come out without anything. Well, guess what? We run an article search on the dog or run a search for ginseng, that dog's going to find that ginseng.
Wow.
You got to think about that dog's nose. I mean, think about it like this. If you have a jar of spaghetti sauce, you and I smell spaghetti sauce. That dog smells tomatoes. He smells basil. He smells oregano. He can pick that apart. And just seeing the dog's work, I mean, I had a really good idea of how it was, but now having the leash in my hands and seeing it apply, it's incredible. I mean, absolutely incredible what these dogs are capable of. So on the ginseng, you know, we're going to use it. You know, hey, the guy went in here, or the guy cut across my property. You know, we're gonna be able to track people in. You know, if we get a call, we're not just going to be getting the dogs out during deer season and see a truck and, you know, track somebody to his tree stand. You know what I mean? That's the purpose of the dogs is a tool, and we're going to use them as a tool to make cases for us.
Speed up the time and save some money for sure. And that's what's incredible about this is, like you said, if they found that item that they were looking for up, like you said, up north,
in
5 minutes, that could have been, you know, 12 hours for five officers.
Or never.
Yeah, the
let's face it, when you're hunting for something, you're going for eyesight.
Yeah. Right.
Dogs.
Yeah,
they
it's amazing, you know what I mean, what these dogs are capable of. But, I mean, such a great tool and such a great resource. And the other states that have these programs, you know, just talk about, you know, the cases that they've made, finding hidden fish, finding, you know, the guy who cut the spur or popped the beard off the turkey, cut the spurs off, chucked the beard in the weeds, you know what I mean, or things like that. I mean, waterfowl is a big one. I mean, guys shoot the wrong species of duck and instead of manning up and making the call and saying, hey, you know, I messed up, you know, we get guys that stomp them in the mud. We get guys that breast them out and try to hide them because they don't want to waste the meat. These dogs, you know, they're going to detect these things. And just, you know, I worked a fall turkey case this year. A guy was killing turkeys over bait. And if I could have had a dog to get me back to where he had shot, and if I had the dog to find that shotgun wad in the middle of that corn pile that I was looking for, I found it, you know, like 4 hours later. And it took all that to put that case together, and they're a tool. They're no different than any tool that you have on your tool belt. You know, they're a dog. I mean, they're not going to be perfect, you know, no different than you or I, but we are training them at a very high caliber. These dogs are getting more training than most canine dogs, most programs are getting.
You know, Chris, the part you and I got to talk earlier, the part that two parts here that really have me thankful you guys are doing things the way is the director told you not only are we going to do this, but we're going to have the best program that there possibly can be.
Yeah.
So it's not a halfway going in ideal. The other part, and I want to talk about this a little bit, is you guys also have a nonprofit foundation that's helping with this.
Correct. Yeah. To elaborate there, when you was talking about, you know, have the best program, that was the chief, chief of the Division of Wildlife. When we sat down in the room and everybody got together, he had a very clear direction, and he wanted us to build a program and build it right. He wanted, you know, us to utilize the best equipment, get the best dogs that we can get. And I see a lot of other programs, you know, different wildlife programs that don't have that support and don't have that resource. Where on the other hand, you know, we've been told, hey, take this and run with it and make it the best program you can. And it's been nice. There's a lot of envy out there from other states knowing that we have, you know, that type of support because it seems like some other states, you know, will struggle with support as far as financial support. But, yeah, so one of the neatest things about this canine program is the conservation partnerships. And part of that is, you know, it's important. You know, the Division of Wildlife, we really value those conservation partners that we have.
Right.
You know, the NRA, the Whitetails Unlimited, the Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever, Safari Club International. I mean, the list goes on and on. National Wild Turkey Federation, Buckeye Big Buck Club. But we actually, right off the bat, got several conservation clubs that heard about the program and said, hey, we want in. We want in at the grassroots level. And so any of you guys, any of you Whitetails Unlimited members out there, you know, we work with your organization. Whitetails Unlimited, from day one, said, you get this program green-lighted, you got $25,000.
And that's awesome.
That's a nice jump.
Not only did they say that, but they followed through with it.
Good deal.
So, you know, that those monies that you spend at banquets come back into these communities and come back to boost this program. It's, you know, it's definitely, it's great to have the conservation club support. Safari Club International, Southwest Ohio, they jumped on immediately, $5,000.
Wow.
Buckeye Big Buck Club. Buckeye Big Buck Club immediately jumped in, put $2,000 toward it. Pheasants Forever, you know, no questions asked, $500. And all those things, you know, it really helps to, you know, it's just really nice support. It helps the program, helps sustain it. And more than anything, just the partnerships. You know, they see the value in it. Now, there's a multitude of other conservation clubs that that have contacted us who just haven't had meetings yet, you know, to vote and come up with an amount that they wanted to give. But all of these monies really have funneled in through an organization that got started. You remember the name Horace Carr? Horace Carr spent like 35 years on our Wildlife Council. Horace Carr is from Meigs County, Ohio. You know, the guys on the Wildlife Council donate their time, their energy into that. And Horace spent, you know, over a quarter of a century on that council. And Horace, you know, passed away, and, you know, his family was looking for something, you know, to honor him. And, you know, Horace had a love for dogs and a passion for the outdoors. And in addition to that, Horace Carr had passed away, and unfortunately, his son-in-law,
right,
Eric Onnestead, Dr. Eric Onnestead, who was a vet in Southeast Ohio, Eric had passed away as well. So the family decided that, you know, one great way to honor these two guys is to come up with a fund that they know that they would support. So the family actually formed a nonprofit called the Carr Onnestead Foundation, Canine Foundation Fund. And that nonprofit was formed by them, and the money is all earmarked only for the wildlife canines. So, you know, just tremendous. You know, it's neat to see someone's passion, you know what I mean, for their loved ones. And you know, it's tragic to lose anybody. But to be able to tie in a nonprofit organization to something that you know that they would care about, that they would support, that, you know, encompasses Horace's love for wildlife and Eric's, you know, all the hours and dedication he put into, you know, veterinary medicine. And we're just thrilled to have them as a partner.
No doubt.
Especially, you know, having Horace's and Eric's name attached to it. So they've done some fundraisers. You can check them out. They're in the process of creating their website. They're 501c3. They fall underneath the Appalachian Foundation. So if you get on Google and look that up, there's several different foundations that are underneath of them, kind of like the big umbrella. Very accredited group. It's the outpouring of support has been phenomenal. It's been awesome.
You know, Chris, we appreciate the opportunity to really get to talk about this a little bit with you. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more. We're going to take a break and pay a few bills. You're listening to Southeastern Ohio's Outdoor Show here on Highway 103.